This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, hello to everybody out there at TFMR. Hey, it's time for another one of those special podcasts. You know the ones we like to do, where we bring in a CEO of a mining company or an exploration company and just get the straight skinny direct from the top. We've been doing this for years, and a lot of times I'm able to set these up through my friend Dan Amadouri, who has contacts throughout the business, works with a lot of companies to help promote them and get some light of attention shined upon them. And one of those companies that we first discovered back, three, 4 years ago, it's called Callinex Mines. And at the time we got to know Max Porterfield, who's the president and CEO. He had a couple updates. I was a shareholder at the time for a number of reasons. I thought it was a great company. I thought Max sounded like he really knew what he was doing. And you know, zinc was in the middle of a big bullish run. And we thought, you know, all the industrial commodities with President Trump's infrastructure plan back in 2017, there were a lot of reasons to be excited about Callinex. And then, geez, a lot of those reasons just kind of slipped away. Since then, the company has done a reverse split. Zinc has fallen, 40%. And looking around, I don't know, about a year ago, I thought, you know, this one might be one that's going to tread water for a while. So even I positioned myself back out of Callinex into some other exploration companies. So when the opportunity came up to speak with Max again, I thought, you know what? You know, in a sense of buying low and selling high and all that kind of stuff, maybe it was time to get an update. So here we are. Max Porterfield's back with us. And I figured, again, if anything, anyone can tell us the status of Callinex and all the changes they've been through, it'd be Max. So, Max, with that lengthy introduction, hey, thank you for taking a few minutes. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be back on the show and give you an update on everything that's progressed. It's been definitely an exciting and volatile past few years, to say the least.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, though, like we talked about, the zinc market and a lot of those base metals and everything were really just doing great a couple of years ago. And it's been a tough couple of years since, I don't call it a price correction, global slowdown. We got this virus now we got to worry about and what that's going to do to the global economy. But, you know, a lot of times that can kind of make a company lean and mean. So you've got experience running mining companies. I know you're invested in the company yourself. So, Max, I mean, sell me again. Tell me why all the changes that you've gone through have been worth it and why Callinex deserves another look.
You know, absolutely. So last we spoke, we were in a much stronger zinc market environment, and Callinex does have inherent exposure to zinc because at the bottom of the zinc cycle, which was around sub 70 cents, today zinc's around 92 cents a pound. We went and aggressively acquired some assets in Eastern Canada that were zinc dominant. So we kind of got branded or marketed per se and known as a company that had zinc assets, and therefore we're going to have inherent exposure to the zinc market, which was great. Zinc had a run just like we had kind of forecasted and, you know, still like zinc longer term, of course, up to $1.60 a pound. And then that's when the trade war between the U.S. and China broke out. It was around May 2018. And that's at a time when we had acquired those zinc assets in Eastern Canada and New Brunswick, the Bathurst Camp, Nash Creek, and Superjack. We had very aggressively and quickly doubled the resource base. And when we put out our preliminary economic assessment, again, zinc's at $1.60, but within weeks, you had the tariffs start hitting. And that really put the brakes on any kind of euphoria or optimism in the base metal space, because that put on concerns about a slowdown in the global economy based upon the trade war. And within 3 months, you had zinc prices go from $1.60 a pound down to $1 a pound. And that's when, you know, again, Callinex's valuation took a dramatic decrease, just like everyone else in the zinc space. So that was a tough experience to go through, quite frankly, something that you're so passionate about and you're working so diligently on, and everyone on your team is the same way and has that enthusiasm, kind of gets swept aside based upon things that are out of your control. So with that being said, we did use that as an opportunity to consolidate the share structure, which is what we did last year. We did a 10-for-1 rollback. So we had 8.6 million shares. We recapitalized the company and we did a financing as well. And then we went back to the bread and butter of what our business is about, and that's making discoveries and doing that through aggressive exploration. So nothing's really changed to that end. Just the valuation is much less expensive, or I mean, much less than what it was before, I should say. But the opportunity to make a big win and a big score where you create a lot of value for investors through discovery is still in Calinex. So with that being said, we took a regional approach to exploration in Bathurst, our Nash Creek project, and we're at the tail end of a 5,000-meter drilling campaign at Nash Creek and Superjack, and that's to further make additional discoveries on those properties subsequent to that preliminary economic assessment that we put out in 2018. And then also concurrently, we had a drilling campaign in Flin Flon, Manitoba. And Flin Flon is something that's near and dear to, you know, everyone's heart here at Calinex, and we're all invested in making a discovery in Flin Flon because that's an area that had over 90 years of continuous production, actually over 95 years of continuous production across 32 mines, and the flagship mine in the town there is due to shut down in 2022. And that was an area that we had a lot of attention. We had a very nice valuation, up to $60 million valuation at one point on a discovery hole that we hid in Flin Flon in 2016. But we weren't able to replicate that immediately. And then that's part of exploration is you got to refine your exploration model and approach. And so that's what we've done as we're taking a new approach to exploring the Pine Bay project, where we think there's a lot of upside to make a big discovery. And we're drilling that right now with a 3,000-meter campaign and should have news out pretty soon on that as well. And again, that's at a time where that community is in deep need of a discovery with the mine shutting down in the community there. And you know, I think we're aligning our focus and our interests with those of the communities that with when we explore, and that's where I think you create a lot of opportunity for your shareholder base.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very small company, as you said, in terms of market cap, but you've got, relative to your market cap, a decent amount of cash.
Yeah. So as the most recent financials, we have $2.2 million in the treasury. And that's obviously going to have come down a bit because of the ongoing drilling that we've been doing over the past several months. And then in terms of the valuation, we're looking at a $7 million market cap as of right now. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity to make discoveries within the portfolio, and that can have a dramatic impact on the equity valuation of the company, irrespective of overall market conditions. So, again, I think, you know, fundamentally nothing's changed with the company's assets for the longer term. You know, if you look at zinc prices today at 92 cents a pound, that's when you're going to have a lot of cutbacks in global production come about. I mean, there's a recent study that said if you had zinc prices fall below a dollar, you'd see about 6 to 8% cutback on global supply. So this is at a time where you have global inventories for refined zinc have been under a lot of pressure. But mm-hmm. The bottleneck's really been on the smelting capacity globally, but it's a very tight market right now. So if you have any, you know, price environment where it's uneconomic, then it's going to have a big impact on supply. In fact, if you look at Trevally, for example, which is a producer in Bathurst, and they have operating mines elsewhere. They're one of the largest producers of zinc in the world. Their all-in sustaining cash costs of a pound of zinc right now is $1 a pound. Mm. And that doesn't even include G&A and, you know, anything to keep the lights on within the organization. So, again, when you have a major producer like that, and that's where their economics are, you kind of see where the long-term fundamentals for the commodity is. Now, the recent coronavirus, as you mentioned, is obviously, if it wasn't, you know, we get over the trade war, start alleviating that, and then you get hit with the coronavirus. And, you know, I do think that that's a very serious issue, the coronavirus, in terms of what it can be. And I think the swift action is absolutely necessary. I am a little bit concerned that maybe the reaction can cut, you know, slow down global growth if it's too prolonged. I mean, it's unprecedented, I think, in terms of some of these stoppages that you've seen at different manufacturing hubs around the world already, in Asia in particular. And what is the impact that's going to have is obviously what's weighing on the base metal prices right now. And that's why you've had, you know, both copper and zinc come down, and you've had the precious metal space perform very, very well.
So, Max, you mentioned getting kind of pigeonholed as a zinc company. With the projects that you have and the mines that you've acquired, I mean, what is your exposure to gold, silver, and other metals?
Yeah, so what's unique about our portfolio is that we're focused on again, the geologic endowment of an area. So we're focused mm-hmm. within mining jurisdictions that have we're in close proximity infrastructure, because one of the biggest upfront hurdles for, you know, a deposit going economic, becoming economic, is really the upfront capital costs. So having all that infrastructure in place obviously compresses your upfront capital costs, and really reduces a lot of the hurdles for something to be economic. With that being said, the deposit style that we're exploring for is what's known as volcanogenic massive sulfide deposits, or more commonly known as VMS. And they're known for, again, making up these mining camps. They occur in clusters. Like I said, in Flin Flon earlier, that jurisdiction's got 32 mines and counting. And they're also known for being polymetallic, and they're a mix between base and precious metals. So you'll have, you know, copper, zinc, and then you also have that precious metals component with gold and silver. And each deposit is different and varies. Some are more, you know, zinc dominant, some are more copper dominant. For example, if you look at our discovery hole that we hit in Flin Flon in 2016, that was 6% zinc, 0.7% copper, but it was also 1.8 gram per ton gold and 2 ounces per ton silver. So again, that shows the polymetallic nature. You know, if you looked at the zinc equivalent number, it'd be 13.1% zinc equivalent. So you can see how robust the precious metals component is on these VMS deposits in Flin Flon. And that's really what's made them so appealing and so sought after discovering them is how, you know, the value of them. So we do have a target on discovering a large deposit at our Pine Bay property there to that end. If you look at the deposits in the Bathurst Camp, Nash Creek is going to be more zinc dominant. It's a zinc lead silver deposit. And then we also have an asset in Newfoundland, the Point Leamington deposit, where that's going to be a zinc gold copper deposit. And the historic resource has just under a gram per ton gold of almost 500,000 ounces. So again, there's a significant amount of precious metals components with these VMS deposits. And that's what makes them so unique, is that they can really sustain any kind of fluctuations in commodity prices once they go into production because, you know, the different credits that are there in addition to the base metals.
Yeah, I know, Max, you mentioned it earlier, you follow the global economy, you have to as a CEO. And, you know, whether it's the virus that slows things down or, you know, just a crashing global economy in general, you see what's going on in Germany, places like that. The central banks are going to respond with the only thing they know, which is lower interest rates and more liquidity, and that should probably be good for gold and silver. And I can you speak, I mean, is that kind of the way you see it too? And then, I mean, does that, with specific to your company, can rising gold and silver make that price, make the rest of your projects more economically feasible? You know what I mean? That can that gold and silver component go up in price enough that it makes drilling or the acquisition of that project by somebody else more feasible, regardless of what the price of zinc is? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Well, I mean, quite simply, I think there's a number of things to look at to that, and I think for sure all this that's going on in the global economy and this government policy is going to be driving precious metal prices higher. I mean, you're seeing gold prices hit all-time highs in a number of currencies. I believe actually just happened to the Canadian dollar, I think, yesterday, if I read correctly.
Yep.
So that's absolutely taking place. And then again, you have a negative real interest rate environment. You're going to have rising precious metals prices. You're seeing it play out right now because, again, you're not getting any type of yield on any of the bonds out there. Where else are you going to go for a safe haven? And then, you know, I think overall it's concerning because if no one's getting any yields on bonds, it's going to press people to go find yield somewhere. And then that's going to get into creating other bubbles in other areas of the economy, whether it be in equities or what have you. And I think you're kind of seeing that play out right now. I mean, everyone's been so trying to chase returns that they're going to take more and more risk to do that. So with that being said, in terms of exploration business, it does have an excellent impact on exploration overall. I mean, if you look across the board, I'd say about 75% of all exploration dollars raised goes for gold and gold exploration. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a good commodities market, particularly in the gold space, I think it's going to draw attention and capital into the sector, and everyone benefits from that. Now, in terms of the impacts of gold on the portfolio, sure, it's going to have a positive impact on the portfolio in areas like Point Leamington, where we do have gold resource there, and it will create a lot of excitement on a discovery hole and anywhere across the portfolio that is gold rich. But to answer you to that, no longer and back into your question there, will it have a direct impact in terms of valuation? Not on the assets in New Brunswick, where we have we don't have a strong, you know, gold, no gold credit, but don't have a strong precious metals component to it.
But a company like yours, I mean, can still grow, even in a slow growth economy, just people realize the value of the assets that you have. So, I mean, just kind of refresh. I mean, I just want to double back, I guess, in a sense, to the projects you got, what you plan to do with them, you know, the ones that you think are, I guess, the most, I don't know, not necessarily, you know, the most, the prettiest ones is what comes to mind. How do you de-risk them? How do you get value out of them? You know, what's your exit strategy? That kind of stuff.
Right. For the portfolio across the board, again, is in assets in close proximity to infrastructure. In terms of the ones that I think has the biggest immediate upside for our shareholder base is going to be a discovery in the Flin Flon camp. Just outside of Flin Flon, Manitoba, like I mentioned before. We've got a project there called Pine Bay, which, again, has all the geological earmarks to host a very large deposit there, but no one's really kind of solved the puzzle. And in a lot of ways, exploration is putting together a very, very complex puzzle to lead you into making a discovery. And that's just, you know, putting the pieces together from different data sets, whether it be electromagnetics or drilling or what have you. But Pine Bay is unique in that it's 90% of all the ore ever mined in the Flin Flon camps hosting what's known as the felsics rock type, to keep it simple. And the Pine Bay area encompasses what's known as the Baker Patton felsic rock package, which is the largest accumulation of felsic rocks that's been mapped at surface in the Flin Flon camp. That, coupled with some other key signatures, is what's led other companies, some very large exploration companies in the early 1990s and before, have substantial exploration targets on there of, you know, 20 to 30 million tons. And to kind of give you an idea of deposit, the 777 mine's well over 25 million tons. And that's a mine that's been in production for, you know, since 1994 or so, and generated in excess of $1 billion in tax revenue. So you can kind of see the economics and value of creation of these type of deposits if you are successful in exploring for them. Uh-huh. And that's why when we made that discovery hole at Pine Bay in 2016, it really got the market excited, and we went from, you know, a $20 million valuation at the time to over $60 million valuation at the time on just a single drill hole. It was because it was the Flin Flon type of grades and mineable widths in an area that should host and has the potential to host a very large deposit. At a time when there's a deep need for a discovery in that community, given the that closure of the 777 mine in town. The problem with that was is that when we made it, we weren't able to immediately replicate that.
Right.
And that was because of some characteristics that we found with the mineralization that we encountered that were unique to the area, but not necessarily unique to the to VMS deposits globally. So with that being said, we took a time out on that property for, you know, a year, year and a half, and we didn't ever stop thinking about it or working at it. We just stopped actively, you know, drilling it and exploring it to that end. So what we've done there is we've taken a new approach, and we've brought in a tool that is typically actually used in more commonly known in gold exploration called IP. It's induced polarization, and it looks for different rock properties than the traditional tool in the Flin Flon camp. And so we've brought that in as a kind of a different approach that we've seen utilized elsewhere. Successfully. It's just not common in the Flin Flon area. And we're taking a new approach there. And that's what our drilling campaign is going to be focusing on is drilling these new targets that have been generated with this new tool set and data set we brought in. And then going back and using the traditional tools in tandem with that new tool to vector us towards a discovery. And that's kind of what's ongoing there. And so, you know, hitting an economic discovery hole, again, can have big implications to your evaluation immediately. And then as you de-risk that through following up and what have you, obviously the valuation can go up from there. And so that's how you create a lot of value for your shareholders in the very near term. It's obviously that higher risk component of the mining business. You have exploration and development and, of course, production. But the industry is known for returning exceptional returns to shareholders when you do discover something, particularly in an area that is so well endowed and obviously in deep need of a discovery. And that kind of goes to part of your other question was, well, what's the exit strategy? Well, naturally, when you make a discovery like that, there's going to be some suitors that want to take that over, develop it, and take it into production, particularly at a time when you have huge reclamation liabilities on that infrastructure in Manitoba there.
Well, Max, let me wrap up with this. I mean, you've piqued my interest again. And here's your company. The market cap has fallen by 80% or so, but you've still got cash. You've still got the projects. I mean, in a sense, it's almost a contrarian, buy when everybody else is selling or has sold type of thing. So just let's wrap up with this. Tell everybody about your commitment to the company. You know, the fact that you're a shareholder. And then for anybody that wants to learn more, how do they learn more? What do they do?
No, absolutely. I think, you know, Warren Buffett says it best. You got to be greedy when others are fearful. And, yep. And I saw a lot of fear in the Calinex share price, as well as everybody else that's in this business as well. We were no different in terms of really share price performance relative to our peer group. But I use that as a big opportunity to really put my money where my mouth is. I was a significant buyer on the open market, both before the rollback, after the rollback, and as well as in a subsequent financing. So today I own roughly 4% of the company, outstanding shares. Family is a big owner as well. You know, I think my family in total owns a little in excess of 10% of the outstanding shares. And then we also have, you know, great shareholder base. That really a supportive, like Resource Capital Fund owns just under 10%. And they've been a stable investor since 2015 when they made their investment in the company. So again, we rolled back the stock, consolidated the share structure, and put us in a position to make a big discovery with our drilling campaigns in Manitoba and New Brunswick. And again, to find any more information about the company, what we discussed, feel free to go to our website at calinex.ca. CALLINEX.ca. You get our contact details. We always like speaking to current shareholders and potential investors into the company. And then you can also purchase the shares in the open market. In Canada, we trade under the ticker the TSX Venture Exchange under the ticker CNX. Mm-hmm. And then in the United States, on the OTC, we trade under the ticker CLLXF.
Terrific. And again, I'll put the website link right here on this page. And again, anybody can, I'm sure there's an investor relations tab or something like that. Anybody can call up or email you guys and find out more.
Absolutely.
Well, Max, thank you. Like I said, you've piqued my interest again, and I appreciate that. I know it's been a tough couple of years, man. And if you're going to be in the mining industry, as you have for as long as you have, you know that's kind of how it goes. There's peaks and troughs. But I like what you've done. And I certainly think Calinex deserves another look. So let's make sure we keep in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to you being a shareholder next time we talk.
Yeah, we'll make sure we are. And Max, thank you.
Right.
Keep up the good work, my friend.
All right. Take care.
And from all of us at TFMR, thank you for listening. Again, check out Calinex Mines, CNX up in Canada, or CLLXF in the States. We'll be sure to keep an eye on it here at TFMR. Thanks for listening, everybody.